Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Albion Roar Down Under, sponsored by Pure Media. My name is Richard Parker here in Auckland, New Zealand, and joining me every week is the founder of the Seagulls Down Under Supporters Club, Steve Longley. So after a snatch and grab by Leicester at the Amex last Saturday, we look forward to Saturday's crucial home game against Huddersfield. Let's hope Brighton can send Huddersfield close to relegation and push ourselves forward to Premier League safety. On this show, we will be reviewing the game against the Crafty Foxes, and I'll be asking Steve for his scrappy 1-0 win prediction against Huddersfield. So our guest this week is a former Albion player who, even though he only played 14 times for the Seagulls, managed 7 goals and left an indelible mark on the Brighton fans. He's the second famous person to come out of Slough after David Brent. It's Lloyd Owusu.
How are you guys? All good, mate?
Good, good, good.
How are you, Lloydy?
So, right, mate. Australia is now your home. How did that come about, and what are you doing now?
Yeah, Australia is home at the moment. Quite an interesting story, to be fair. I always remember I was in the change room or in the physio room at Brighton at the Wiv Dean, and my phone rang, and it was an Australian agent, a guy called Richie Hinton called me and said, "Oh, hi Lloyd, my name's Richie. I'm based in Australia, and a team are quite keen for you to sign for them. Would you be keen?" And I must admit, my first thoughts, Australian Football A-League, I was like, nah, no way. But within that time, my conversation was overheard by Malcolm, the physio. And he said, "Oh, what's that about Australia?" And I said, "Oh, some guys just called me about a team called Adelaide United." He goes, "Oh, do you remember Paul Reed that used to play for us? A couple of years before, I go, yeah. He goes, "Oh, Reedy's out there." He said, "It's brilliant." He goes, "I'll give you a number and give him a call then." And I called Reedy up. I just gave him a message and said, "Yeah, Reedy, I've just had this guy, Richie Hinton, who actually happened to be Reedy's agent." I said, "Yeah, your team, I heard that they're quite keen for me to come and sign." He goes, I just obviously put a seed in his head and asked him a few questions. What was it like out there and the standard, et cetera, et cetera. And he goes, "Yeah, it's good. We're in the Champions League. We're doing this, doing that." I said, "You know what? It could be quite interesting." So I messaged the agent. I said, "Look, I'm more than happy to come and entertain it if the club want me to fly out and have a look. So I can have a look out there and see what it's like. And then, yeah, then I can make some decisions from there." So that's how that sort of materialised for me to start in playing or come to the A-League and sign for Adelaide United.
So how many years did you play for Adelaide? And were you pretty prolific in your time?
To be fair, I would not at all. To be fair, unfortunately, I mean, I signed a two-year contract because obviously, I mean, I don't get me wrong, I wanted to stay at Brighton. To be fair, obviously, I had such a great time there with the survival, and it was no secret. I made it aware to a lot of people and Russell Slade that I wanted a two-year contract because I honestly believed I deserved for what I did, and even on less money than what I was on as well. And he was only offering me a one-year deal. And no disrespect, obviously I wanted a bit more security because I wasn't getting any younger. So in the end, they didn't offer me the 2-year, they offered me a 1-year. So because Adelaide offered me 2-year, I went out there, signed a 2-year deal. But prior to me on route to Adelaide, I was struck down with swine flu and pneumonia.
Oh.
So it was when the big epidemic happened, that 2009. And to be fair, from there, I was in such a bad way. I was on the back burner from day one. So when I arrived in Adelaide in July, I think it was July time, I was just so crook. I missed about six to eight weeks of no training whatsoever. I was in solitary confinement for 3 weeks. So it just really kicked off to a real downer. And then when I did finally eventually make my debut for them, it was more all to do with adrenaline, and I wasn't even fit at all. And just never really cemented a place there. I ended up only playing 16 games in total out of the 2 years. But I mean, the second year I was injured. So halfway through that year, I got paid up and ended up coming back to England late 2010 December. So it wasn't like the greatest of times in my career. Where no disrespect to the A-League, I honestly thought I was going to come here and do really well and set it alight, which I believe I knew I would have been able to if I was 100% fit. But I guess that's football. But I mean, I don't dwell on nothing. I don't regret nothing because at the end of the day, it sort of gave me that path to get the opportunity to come back out here and live. So yeah, I don't regret it at all.
Well, I was going to say you're back in Australia. So you obviously went back after Adelaide. You went back to England, and Australia must have left something in your heart for you to go back.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I mean, it was such a it was such a great place in regards of having a young family, knowing the safety, the weather, the outdoor living. I just thought, you know what, this is top draw. You know what I mean? For my kids to be growing up on the beach every day and having sun, it was second to none. So for me, it was always a case of, within my time in Adelaide, I applied for residency to see if I ever wanted to come back in the future. So within that time in Adelaide originally, I luckily got residency. And then from there, I had a 5-year window to say to myself, you know what, if you do want to come back, you've got 5 years to decide what after being in England. But to be fair, 18 months of being back in England, I just decided, you know what, after, you know, with respect to the UK, I was living in South East London. It was dreary, just raining, just ghetto boys in the park. I couldn't even let my little daughter play in the park safe. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to pack up shop and give it a go and let's go Australia.
I think a lot of Brits feel like that, to be honest with you. So when you actually went back to England, did you sign for another team?
Yes, I came back. There was actually quite a few League 1 and League 2 clubs who wanted to sign me. I ended up signing for Luton.
Oh, yeah.
In the conference. Yes, I signed for them to the end of the season. So from January the 1st of 2011 to the end of May, had a real good spell with them as well. So I ended up signing for them. And then within that time, after leaving Luton, I went to Cyprus, signed for FC Paphos.
Oh, wow, okay.
I signed a year contract with them, but no disrespect, within 6 weeks and before the UK transfer window closed in September, I got my contract paid up in Cyprus because they weren't trying to pay us. Mm. So I thought, let me try and get out of here before it starts becoming a headache. And then, came back, signed for Barnet, signed a short-term deal with Barnet for 6 months. And then within that time, I had a little loan spell with Hazen Yedin. And then it came, I think, in 2012. I just said to myself, you know what, do I really need to be chasing the game for XYZ? I'm not getting any younger. I've got the residency in Australia. Let me just say, you know what, I had enough money to say behind us to say, let's go for a couple of years to see if we can set up a shop and then make some headways. And then just decided to move and emigrate 2012 in March.
So what's Lloyd Owusu doing now, 2018?
Yeah, so over the last, since I've been in the last 6 years, I was playing semi-professional here. And I've just been coaching, to be fair. That's all I've ever known, you know. And I always said when I was a pro, when I do retire, I'll always want to give back to the next generation and help the next generation of kids learn and play football. So I've been coaching here at quite a few private schools. At the moment, I'm at probably the top private school in the whole country called Cranbrook, which is a very prestigious school with all the Packers and the Hems and the, who else is up in the, oh, the, yeah, just top, the top Australian people, royalty who have come through the school. So I coach there. I'm the head of the open 11, the first 11 now. And I'm actually just been offered another role within the club as a general duties master. So it's a role where they want me to sort of mentor and make sure the boys at the school are not messing around, because they see that a lot of boys have a lot of respect for me. So
yeah,
that's going to be interesting. Hopefully start that in term two next month. Just launched my own coaching company called XL Soccer, which is a soccer provider, coaching providing company where we do one-on-one training, group training, goalkeeper training, soccer mums, boot camps, multi-sports. So, just networking. So that's ticking over slowly but surely.
Awesome.
And, done the old acting and modelling as well since I've been here as well. So, yeah, things are just really, just trying to make ends meet, really.
So we'll talk about your involvement with Seagulls Down Under and how you met Steve. He probably stalked you. but let's talk about your time with Brighton. Now, I'm not sure there's been a Brighton player that has made such an impact in such a short space of time. Now, we all knew about you because you scored a lot of goals against us. but when you finally signed for us on loan, you made quite an impact. So how did you enjoy playing for Brighton?
It was like, say, out of my 15, 18 year career, it was probably one of the best times. You know, it was just such a surreal time coming into the club, knowing that, I think when I first signed, I think we were like 8 points adrift from safety. So I was playing for Cheltenham and I had to leave Cheltenham because of financial restraints at the club. So luckily, I actually sort of made some headways myself with clubs just to see if anyone was keen to get me in, come on loan. And then I spoke to Dean White at the time. He goes, oh, mate, we're actually looking, we're dying for a striker now, because obviously Mickey had just been sacked and we're just struggling to score goals. So I thought it was a great place to be. I thought, you know what, let me come, because there were some good guys that I knew there already. So it was a no-brainer for me to come, and especially to be a bit nearer to London as well, which was good. So, I came to Brighton. I remember the first game. The actual first game was Bristol Rovers away, but then it got called off. I remember, yeah, we went to Bristol Rovers, got called off. And then I think a few days later, then the Gaffer Rutherford took over. And then I think we went to Leighton Orient. We set my the first game, and then I think we actually lost that first game, to be fair. 3-1, I think it was. But then after that, it was just an absolute snowball effect. We just went on an absolute brilliant run. And then luckily for myself, the goals were there, which were provided by my teammates, and especially Gary Hart, which was a great combo, the old two old heads. But the times were brilliant. Just the fans were top draw, just the way they made me feel welcome, the players and stuff. It was just it was brilliant. Word of over stuff.
Did you have any apprehension about coming to Brighton and maybe basically how the fans might feel about you? Because, yeah, you know, you did have a reputation for scoring against us. You played for Brentford, played for Reading. I mean, personally, when you came and signed for us, I was delighted because proven goal scorer, you know?
Yeah. To be fair, I mean, I don't want to sound bigoted, but in my career, you know, when certain strikers go to certain clubs, some fans are a bit like, oh, but I think just the way I've been with fans over my career, even if it's been my own fans and even been at away games towards our fans, always showing that respect to fans, because at the end of the day, it's all about the fans. You know, they're the ones who pay our wages.
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? It's for me, I had no apprehensions about them signing, because, like I said, as soon as I got there, the fans were just like top draw. I think they knew the way Lloyd Russo was as a player was, no matter whatever team he plays for, he's always worked 110% and he's given his best. And I think that's all fans want from players, you know?
Absolutely. Steve, memories of Lloyd when he played for the Albion, or even against the Albion?
Oh, definitely against the Albion. I was over here when he was playing over there, but I seem to remember him scoring a couple of goals against us. They got beat 4-0, I think it was, in an evening match at Brentford, which was just disastrous for us. But, he's always banged the goals in, even at the Renf, mate, haven't you?
Which we'll talk about a little bit later. So, Lloyd, obviously, when you were playing for the Albion, you were also playing alongside Glenn Murray, I believe.
Yeah, oh, Glenn. He's top kid. He's played with my sisters and good stuff now. He's back there. Glenn was obviously a few years. He was, but then obviously he got injured and sort of gave me my opportunity to come into the team as well. But I always remember when he came back, I can't remember, I think it may have been Oldham we were playing, or Scunthorpe. And me or someone else got fouled for a pen. So the actual ball that was being used from the original free kick from the pen had gone away. So I'd run, because I was assigned to take the penalty. So I ran to go and get the ball. And when I got to the ball, I see Muzza with the ball in the penalty spot about to take it. And I was livid. I said, hey, what are you doing? He goes, I said, mate, if he best score. And funny is weird, because only a couple of weeks ago, I tweeted him the other day.
Yeah.
And so I think I said something about, I think he scored. I think when he scored a hat-trick last couple of weeks ago, one of them was a penalty. I said, oh, great pen. And he messaged me back and goes, oh, he goes, big man. He goes, oh, yeah, it just reminisces the day when I took the ball off you. I'm so happy that I didn't score, because I know you would have done me. So, he's a good lad, and I'm happy, delighted for him that he's doing well now.
Oh, he's having an absolutely amazing season. But interestingly enough, we talk about penalties and Glenn Murray, and I will touch on it a bit later, the game against Leicester. But do you think he's coming to some undeserved criticism for the penalty miss against Leicester?
Yeah, I heard about that. Look, at the end of the day, look, it's part and parcel of football. Players miss, players score, you know. So it's tough for fans to sort of ridicule players if they miss a penalty. No player ever goes into a penalty saying, yeah, I'm going to purposely miss it, you know. So, they got, I mean, if anything, I hope they get off his back. And I think, like, Glenn's the kind of character who's strong enough who will prove people wrong and just
keep scoring goals to keep Brighton up in the Premiership.
Exactly, and the amount of goals he scored this season has obviously won us more points than those points we perhaps lost because of the penalty miss. At the end of the day, striker, if he hits the target, the keeper saves it. It's a good save, you know. The keeper gets the right way. But he's been absolutely fantastic. So recently you got inducted into the Brentford Hall of Fame. So just tell us about that.
Yeah, that was another surprise for myself that year of 2016. I was coming back to England just to see the family. So for some reason, I don't know, Brentford must have got, I was coming back and they messaged me and said, oh, Louis, they're coming back with, we've inducted you into the Hall of Fame. And I was just like, wow, just never even would have even in my world never thought that. They said, as you're going to be back, we'd love to do it live on the pitch.
I didn't know they had a Hall of Fame.
Yeah, nor did I. I think it's been about the last four years it started.
Who else is in it?
To be fair, some great players over the past. You got Kev O'Connor, who's a true gentleman to the club. He's been there from day dot, from youth team all the way through. Players like Marcus Gale, Bates. You know, I mean, some real legends of the past and present.
Yeah.
Myself and Kev are probably the most recent generation. I think Sam Saunders, he was in it, I believe. So a lot of it's from the older generation. But yeah, I was just privileged to be part of that quail of players who the fans and I guess the club see as done something special for the club. So yeah, I was delighted.
So were you at Brentford for the longest time at a club in your career?
Yeah. I mean, the longest was I was there in total 6 years. I mean, yep. 4 years, 4 years consecutive when I first turned professional.
Hmm.
And then I had another 2 years later on in my career. So yeah, Brentford was probably at the homage of where I started, where Lloyd Russell started. You know, they gave me the opportunity to become a professional and definitely appreciated that.
Would it be not particularly local, but the nearest league team to where you were brought up?
Being brought in Slough, you know, you've got Wickham as well. I would say, yeah, Wickham's probably near. Oh, they're both, I mean, like, 15, 20 miles down the road. So, very, very close. Well, not even 20 miles, I think it's even less than that, to be fair. So, both were close. But like I said, it was a great club to be associated with because I knew quite a few boys who were playing there, youngsters coming through the ranks, like Marcus Bent, Kev Dennis, and then also one of my old neighbours from my way from Slough, CJ, used to be my boot boy. He ended up being my boot boy because I knew him from when we were kids. So I had a bit of a soft spot for Brentford from day one anyway.
Cool. Okay, back to Brighton. Now, you played for a lot of clubs in your time, so that would mean you've been to a lot of grounds. You played in a lot of home grounds. The Theatre of Trees. Just describe what it's like to play there.
At the Wibdean, yeah? Oh, my God. Is this really, really going to be playing in this kind of stadium? It's like an athletics track, open air. I'm thinking it's just going to be nothing, especially on a cold. I mean, once we played on a Friday night, we played Brighton. It's like, what are we doing here? But when I actually came and signed, I must admit, man, them 5,000 to 6,000 fans that clammed in that stadium, mate, they made the away teams know that they had that Brighton at home fans. It was a great atmosphere, and especially when we with the run that we were going on with the fans getting behind us, it was just it was different gravy. You know, they were just really out in their drones of forces and making us feel that being that 12th man out there. You know,
we had a phenomenal record at the Wibdean. Actually, I think over the years that we were there, okay, we had a few seasons where we got relegated, but I think generally our home form was pretty good, and it was a unique atmosphere. There was no doubt about that. There was no other ground like it. And as a fan, at least, yeah. I mean, from a Brighton perspective, we were back in Brighton from being at Gillingham, so it got a bit tiresome towards the end. But it will be looked back. I wouldn't say fondly, but perhaps in a unique way.
I think everybody that went to Wibdean has got a soft spot for Wibdean. You know, I mean, I was lucky to go through that period, the late 70s, when we had the success of going up the divisions and into what was Division 1 then. And, you know, I said to my boys, when we won our first trophy at with Dean, you know, you're lucky you've only waited a few years to see this, and I've waited 30 odd years. And that not only did we win one, but you know, next one came along, then another one came along, and then another one came along. And so, yeah, we had a pretty successful time with Dean.
Yeah, they were good times. There was something different about playing at the With Dean. One, I didn't particularly like Friday nights, but the one thing that Friday nights did bring was that kind of, especially around Christmas when they usually were, is that you could go for a Christmas drink, you'd go to the With Dean, there was a nice sort of festive atmosphere. It was freezing cold, and if it rained, we got completely soaked. But I don't know, there was a kind of togetherness about us all when we were there.
That just built and built and built, didn't it, that togetherness. And they're even still using that hashtag together now, really, because let's face it, there aren't many clubs that have come through what we've come through, losing your ground and playing, you know, 160-mile round trip for your home games and everything else. So that togetherness and the fight for the stadium and everything, it was there, and it just built momentum, didn't it?
Lloyd, when you came and played for Brighton, did you probably knew a little bit about the history of, you know, what went on with the club and losing our ground, etc. Did you just sort of feel there was a bond with the fans?
Oh yeah, straight away. Like I said before, straight away, as soon as I got there, they made me feel like I've been there for years. Each one of them, you know, I mean, I remember walking down the street in Brighton, the town centre, they'd see you and they'd always like, show that respect and say well done or for the weekend or good luck. So yeah, the Brighton fans are top fans, you know.
Who was your favourite player to play alongside?
Probably Gary Hart, you know, with regards to the way everything happened between myself and him and the assist that he done for me with most of my goals. I mean, two old heads who've been there and done that. So I think that was quite a nice combination of experience which brought to the team. Because even though there were still a few youngsters in the team. You know, I mean, Tommy Elphick, Tommy Fraser's, but then we had quite a bit of experience as well. So that blend together was really good, to be fair.
I think at that time, because obviously we didn't have any money, we were looking to bring the youth players through. And there was, like you said, there was quite a few good players that came through. Tommy Elphick went on to obviously captain Bournemouth. He's now playing for Aston Villa, I think. He's done pretty well for himself. I thought Tommy Fraser was a pretty good player when he came in for us. I like the fact that we were able to bring some of the youth team through. Let's move on to Seagulls Down Under. And how did you get involved?
I've always been in contact with Reedy because he'd been ex-teammates as well at Adelaide. So I remember we were at work because I was working with him at Sydney FC. And he said to me, oh, he goes, look, this is a foundation called Seagulls Down Under. A guy called Steve runs it where they play this charity game every year for the Palace. We're against Crystal Palace, obviously, because of the stuff happened back home. So I said, he goes, oh, every October. October, November, Steve, is it? October?
October.
So he goes, every October we have a game against Palace and they try and get old players if possible. I went down for the first year. It was a great day with nice good weather. Barbecue, Steve put on the old barbecue and everything. You know, obviously, again, it was actually nice because there's a lot of, because obviously the guys who were involved, they're all real Brighton fans, like diehard Brighton fans. And for them to play alongside and be close to their idols that they've seen in the past, it was brilliant, you know. So, yeah, and ever since then, yeah, the last years, been involved and always kept in contact with Steve. He always keeps me in contact with, keeps me up to date with what Brighton are doing and everything. So, yeah, it's a great project that he's done, that he's created here in Australia.
And then you were involved in the Supporters Five-a-Side Tournament?
Yeah, we won that one about three, four years ago. That was good, yeah. We got some teams, I mean, there was a couple of teams that tried to do us, but they couldn't, yeah, because that's what we've done now, and we got the trophy. That was brilliant as well, yeah.
That was a good day, actually, because although we had, you know, we obviously had Lloyd and Paul playing for us, there was a lot of older players, including myself, in that team, and we just rotated the team around, and it was it hot that day or what?
Yeah, hot.
It was about 5 degrees and running around a five-a-side court.
Did any of the other teams have former pros?
No, but the there was an SBS side the year before that, I think it was, or a couple of years before that, with a few ex-professionals in it. Craig Foster played in it, I think. Ned Zelich played in it, so they had quite a good side at that point. I mean, I'm quite fortunate with Lloyd and Paul, obviously. It's always hard to get people to come along, and I've always tried to get hold of, you know, some ex-Palace players for the Palace boys, but it's difficult because they've got other things going. They've got their own football schools or stuff going on and involved with TV or something like that. But Foster ex Palace down there next year because he's involved with the John Moriarty Foundation. So
oh, okay.
Having just donated the $7,000 to that charity, hopefully we'll see him along next year.
And you did you did try and persuade Paul Eiffel when we talked to him as well.
Yeah, we did speak to Paul. Paul is quite interested in coming over and playing in it.
Yeah, which will be good. So, Lloyd, do you follow Brighton in the Premier League?
Yeah, I've always, I mean, like I said, every Sunday morning, I always go to my BBC website and see all my clubs that I played for previously, just to see their results.
Well, that must take about 2 hours.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, more clubs than Tiger Woods, mate.
That's all good. But I've still got good connections with some friends there. Obviously, Steve Sidd was one of my best friends in football, you know. So, and obviously, Matty Ryan being associated with Australia, I know Matty since when he was obviously here. So, yeah, it's nice to see some of the players that I know and just make sure, just have a look at the results, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm going to talk to Steve about the Leicester game, but stay with us, Lloyd. So, Steve, yeah. Leicester, what did you make of the game?
Well, it was one of those games that you thought, part of the way through the second half, this could be a 0-0 game and we'd all walk away quite happy with 0-0.
Yeah.
And then obviously we get the penalty. If he scores this, you know, we could hang on for a 1-0 win here, which would be, you know, incredible.
And you're going, scrappy 1-0, scrappy 1-0, yes.
Yeah, but obviously the penalty was saved. I will say, actually, normally Glenn Murray does hit the ball with a bit of pace behind it, and he tried to place it. I'm not sure why he did that, but anyway,
my take on the penalty was, why don't you just smash it down the middle like you've done before? Maybe Schmeichel thought he would do that.
Yeah, but I mean, normally he does hit the ball with a bit of venom, doesn't he, for penalties? But and then two defensive errors really, which cost us a point.
Yeah, it wasn't good. It wasn't good. And we had so many chances. And I think it was just a disappointing player decisions in the certain position, like Esquiardo not passing when he decided to shoot, and, you know, perhaps a few chances that went amiss. That's not a criticism to the players. I mean, they've openly come out, Esquiardo's openly come out and said, yeah, I made the wrong decision. You know, they're only human after all. And I just think that was the difference. We had some chances, but it was just disappointing in the final third.
Yeah, I think both he and Knockhart need to take a leaf out of Gross's book and realise that assists are as good as goals. Because, you know, without the assists, you're not going to score the goals. It's as simple as that. And you know, everybody's got to be better than it has been.
I do think it's quite funny, Steve. You're criticising Knockhart and he didn't even play.
No, I'm just saying, in future, when he gets back on the pitch, he's gonna learn to deliver the ball. That's what his job is.
Yeah, absolutely.
After all, his job is to deliver the ball into the box. And, you know, if he wants to keep taking players on, he's going to get sussed out. And it's the same with Jose. He's got to deliver the ball a lot quicker.
I thought Solly March, when he came on, he did pretty well, actually. He's probably unlucky not to get picked from the start.
Yeah, it was a bit strange, I thought, actually. But, you know, Chris knows what he's doing. He's the manager.
Locardia was pretty decent when he played. I thought he had the licence to roam. He looked aggressive on the ball. And I think he was making things happen.
For me, Murray and Gross both looked a bit tired near the end, so I think I would have stuck March out wide and stuck Locardia
up top
in one of those two spaces. But it's no good looking back. We need to look forward and we need to get on with it and pick up the points on Saturday against Huddersfield.
Yeah, absolutely. Lloyd, just going back to that penalty again, I'm just curious from a striker's point of view. Obviously, you've taken many penalties in the past. When you step up to take a penalty, how many did you decide to smash down the middle? And any penalties that you smashed down the middle, have they ever been saved? I've never seen a goalie stand still.
Yeah, to be fair, I've never been one to smash it down the middle. I've always said to myself, I'm going left or right, simple as that.
I'm either going bottom, I'm going either bottom left, right, bottom left, right, left or right or high, either side. I've never really been one to really have that shot straight, because I mean at the end, also still, as much as you say that, a lot of guys who do that. Some, I mean, I've seen in the past keepers just actually purposely just wait, just stay, just stand, they'll actually stand and just and save them one that get blasted straight down the middle. So yeah, I've always been one to go for corners, me.
So, and when you sort of go to take a penalty, in they do say never change your mind. So you've got an idea, you've done your research, you think, right, it's going in this position. If the keeper saves it, you know, you hold your hands up and you go, good save.
Yeah, for sure. I've always said to myself, I always go to Mike, the goalkeepers, right? There's even been times when I've sort of even had battle with the keeper about to take it. I'm saying, I'm going to your right. I'll put it to your right.
Has that worked? And,
Yeah, and I've still gotten it, and they've still gone that way. Some have gone that way, and just it's because if you can get it that precision,
yeah,
the goalkeeper will never get. It's just the pace of the ball will never. They'll never be able to get there. So, that's what I've done in the past.
So, Steve,
I just give them the eyes, Lloyd. I just give them the eyes. Just look in the right hand side and stick it in the left.
Right.
I see who takes the penalties at the Renf game then.
Me. Only because I got nominated.
Is that like the manager's decision?
No, nothing to do with me. That was Reedy. The first one we played in, we got a penalty. And we all looked around. Who's going to take the penalty? Oh, well, Paul, obviously. No, he nominated me to take it.
Yeah. Did you score?
Yeah, of course I scored.
Oh, of course you did. Was that their goalie wasn't looking or wasn't very good?
I've scored two in the Renf game, I'll have you know.
Oh. Lloyd, I've heard you scored two in the last game, is that right?
I mean, I never played this year. Last year, I was injured. The year before, I think I scored two and two. The year before, two. And I think the year before that as well, two, I think, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, scored one nice free kick, to be fair. I was really happy with myself with that, mate, I tell you.
Yeah, was a good free kick.
But you didn't do the Paul Reed S celebration?
No.
It was a Reedy who scored two goals this year, wasn't it?
No, he scored two goals last year, yeah.
All right, yeah. Okay, cool. All right, so looking forward, Steve, to the Huddersfield game. Obviously, it's a must-win game. We've all been talking about that. If we don't win, have we left ourselves too much to do? Because then we've got Palace the next game away, and you know anything can happen in that game. So if we don't win against Huddersfield... Is the pressure really on?
I don't know if we don't win, but if we don't lose, we're still, you know, 4 points over the next two games, either which way round we do it, I think would be enough to, you know, and then we've still got games in hand to be able to maybe pick up the odd point.
Our game in hand is away at Man City.
Yeah, well, who cares?
Not you, obviously.
I don't care because, you know what, the job in hand has always been to get enough points on the board before we walk off the pitch against Burnley.
Yep.
So Man City, Liverpool, Man United, Spurs, they don't come into it, those games.
And we got
not as far as I'm concerned, anyway. It's always been to get enough points on the board before we finish the game against Burnley. And it hasn't changed. Just because we've got Man City... You know, second to last game, that doesn't mean anything. The job's got to be done before that.
Okay, you're listening to the Albion Roar Down Under, brought to you by Pure Media, the full-service video production company based here in Auckland. Visit www.pureproductions.co.nz for more information on how Pure can create a fully customised, crafted video for your business. If you'd like to get in touch with us, our email is albionroardownunder@gmail.com. Steve, do we miss Dale Stevens?
Of course we do. And anybody who says we don't, like those few people that replied to my tweet, honestly can't be watching the same game because not. Oh, all right, Kyle played well, you know, he played well, but he's not got the same calming influence that Dale Stevens has got.
I don't think he's the same player. He's not the same style midfield player.
No, Dale Stevens plays a little bit deeper. Kyle likes to get forward a little bit more. You don't see Dale Stevens breaking forward. But he has got a calming influence, and I think that rubs off on Davey Popper.
Yeah.
And to be honest, he should probably be up there for player of the season. You know, I know he's been out the past few games, but he's come on in leaps and bounds, really, I think.
You say he should be up there for player of the season. I think he's a long way out ahead for player of the season. I just think, yeah, he's been absolutely fantastic. The best signing we made was signing him on a four-year contract at the end of last season. And he has just grown his stature over the Premier League season. Yeah, we've really, really missed him over the last three games. And it's shown. We haven't scored for three games either.
I mean, it's hard for those players to come in and do a job. Because he's played there every game this season. And then, therefore, the other players, you know, I mean, that's Kale's, what, second, third game in the Premier League?
Yep.
You know, and it's hard to come in and do that, especially, you know, he's been out for such a long time as well. But his game's totally different. It's a totally different game. So you can't really compare the two. He plays well for what he does.
Mm.
But you can't compare him with Stevens because it's a totally different style of play.
Now, against Huddersfield, do you think Chris Hughton will change the game plan at all? Will he attack a bit more, or will he go with the one up top with Gross behind?
What's the normal game, though? I mean, there's the game we were playing for the first third of the season, and then there's the game we played for the middle part of the season where we just stopped the cautiousness and went out and attacked teams. And that, for me, is a far better style of play. And the thing is, we can play that. We can play that game. We proved it against Man United at Old Trafford, you know?
Mm.
You know, we were on the front foot all the time against them, and even some of the other games. And when we play a faster pace, more attacking-minded, all the time we sit deep, we're just inviting pressure all the time. It's just, I honestly hope that we take them by the scruff of the neck on Saturday and, you know, start off with a fast pace and just keep it going.
Mm, yeah,
I think if they go a goal down, I don't think there's any coming back.
Do you think Bong will keep his place on Saturday?
Oh, well, you know, I'm a Sutner fan, so I think he delivers the ball a lot better than Bong does. I mean, look at that at the end of that game. Bong had two chances in the space of 2 minutes to deliver the ball and couldn't beat the first defender.
Yeah, he also had that chance right at the end to score, and
yeah, when he closed his eyes.
He lost his man for Leicester's first goal.
Yeah, which that's not the first time that's happened either, is it?
No. I think he's still had a pretty good season. I just think he's sort of gone off the ball a little bit. So maybe it's a chance for Sutner to come in. But we need Bong for his defensive attributes as well as going forward. Now, Sutner is good going forward, but has he got the same defensive attributes as Bong? I mean, having said that, like we've just said, Bong, you know, lost his man for Leicester's first goal. So it'll be interesting to see what Chris does. I'm sure whatever Chris does, it'll be the right thing to do. We trust him as a manager. Lloyd, just interestingly enough, just talk about a striker that's gone on a bit of a goal drought. Did you have any goal droughts during your career? And if you did, how does that affect you mentally?
Yeah. I remember I went on a bad one. I've won a few at Brentford. But I remember one, especially when I was at Cheltenham. Like, I think I went, 15, 16 games without scoring. And as a striker, yeah, mentally, it's a killer. You know, you feel like anytime you're on that pitch, nothing's going to go right for you. But then on the flip side, you just got to have that positive vibes. And luckily for myself, I had a guy called Alistair Smith, who was under Martin Allen. He came with Martin Allen, and he gave me some visualisation stuff to do. And I must admit, I've done a lot of visualisation stuff and it really helped my game. I came back and I think I went about 5-6 games scoring consecutively. So I guess each person has their own sort of scenario of how they want to try and get back into their game, especially when you're scoring. But yeah, for me, it was all about doing that and then also that extra bit of training as well. So it will help.
So what does the visualisation entail?
So he actually had a brochure. Or a special document, should I say? And to be fair, he only gives it to certain people that he really believes who deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually quite special because it was not just anyone's just got this document. It's quite unique in regards of how you visualize your brain and what you want to do towards games, just your preparation, mental thought process, psyching yourself out, breathing, And yeah, it's brilliant. It's just really good. And like, even now, I mean, I've got it in my little safe, coaching safe clip. If any of my young kids over the years, I've probably only given it to, over the last 6-7 years since I've had it, I've probably given it to maybe 2 or 3 youngsters who I feel like, you know, when you see someone's got something about them, but it's, things aren't going right. Because I would have just given it. It's something that you don't just give to anyone. It's, you know what I mean? It's a bit unique. So yeah, like I said, for me, it really, really helped.
So you said earlier in the show that you're now part of this coaching school. And what kind of age groups do you deal with? Is it, do they start quite young, sort of like 5 and go all the way through? Or do you?
Yeah, I mean, because I'm at a private school. So the private school's from kindy all the way to year 12s, which are the 17, 18 year olds. I'm head coach of the Opens, which is the year 11 and 12 boys. So 16, 17 year old boys. And then during the day, I oversee all the other age groups. So again, it's right across the board from 5 all the way up to 18.
Have many of the boys gone on to become professionals?
There was one boy when I was working at an international football school up on the Central Coast. There was one boy, Trent Bahaja, who was at the school. He ended up signing for the Central Coast Mariners for the first grade. So he's got an AB contract.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the school I'm at now, there's a couple of the boys who are playing at they're playing at a good level in the NPL. So here in Australia, we've got the NPL 1, NPL 2, NPL 3.
Mm-hmm.
So under the so-called A-League, it's like the top semi-professional teams in the country. So in my squad now, I've got quite a few NPL 1 youth players. So I've got not a bad a crop of players. So yeah.
Would you say there's certain players that you see and you go, yeah, they've got potential to make it? And then if you do spot that, do you sort of give them any special, not treatment, because obviously you've got to treat all the boys the same,
yeah,
but is there any sort of, you were talking about the visualization, you only give it to certain boys, is that quite a broad thing, as in not just the visualization but other techniques that you may have, you know, been taught yourself in the past?
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, there's a couple. One of my players was my last year, I had when I first came to the school, I was in charge of the 16 A's, the under 16 A's.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the great copper boys. Then Jack McCrocken, who was my captain. You know, when you see, like you say, you see something in a player. And I sent him over to the UK. He came over to Charlton.
Oh yeah.
For a month, and yeah, they really liked him. They really liked him. So them kind of opportunity. The great thing about these kids here, if I see that potential and I feel like they've got something about them, They can have a little opportunity where they, no disrespect, where they probably would never ever get playing in this country, and having people like myself who have the contacts back home to give them that, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Steve, we were talking in a podcast, not last podcast, the podcast before, about grassroots in Australia and how it's quite expensive actually to send your kids to learn and play football.
So we were talking, Lloyd, about grassroots football with Adam Peacock, Fox Sports, a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, I think it's a bit of a farce that you have to pay $2,000 to put your son in a state league academy, which means that if your parents haven't got the money and you're a fairly good footballer, you're not going to get spotted by somebody, you know? Is that fair to say?
Yeah, definitely. It's, to be fair, when I heard it, and pay from 2 to 3.5 grand to play football, it's absurd. It's just embarrassing how a child has to pay to play football. Like Steve said, there's so many players I've seen here who obviously are top players, but because of their background and their parents' financial status, they just can't afford it. They just can't afford it. So I don't understand why the FFA here in this country, the footballing body, should be taking a leaf from the AFL and going from, not going from bottom to top, it should be from top to bottom, you know, in regards to their structure. So I hope it improves and changes over the years, because, like, no kid should be paying that kind of money to play football.
Well, the problem is that there's not enough funding for the state league sides. And therefore, what's happening is, as far as I can tell, people will tell you differently that this doesn't happen, but as far as I can see, money's being taken from the grassroots level state league football and ploughed into the state league side.
Exactly.
Because it's costing you like $400,000 to run a state league side for the season.
it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing.
So there's obviously not the sponsorship involved for State League football to, you know, to ease that burden, fees for the grassroots football. And it's, you know, and you've got that with the, you know, they're trying to start two A-League sides, but it's a similar sort of thing. Unless you've got the funding and the backing, that could just go completely pear-shaped.
Okay. I have to confess, Lloyd, I've got your Wikipedia page in front of me. And it just says here that you went for a one-week trial for Guangzhou Evergrande in the Chinese Super League.
The opportunity came to go to China to go and have a two-week trial up in Guangzhou in January, I think it was January 2010, no, December, January 2010 it was, I think.
Yeah.
I went there, but no disrespect. I mean, as soon as I got there, I just phoned up the agent. I said, Richie, get me back. It was terrible. No, just dirty. Oh, just people spit. It was horrible. I mean, obviously, being a third world country, it was too. And I just thought I ended up there only for 5 days in the end.
Yeah.
I had to come back, and then it was an experience. So,
are you surprised by all the money there is banging around the Chinese league and them signing up and paying heavy wages for a lot of real decent players?
That was unbelievable, isn't it? You know, the money that these guys are getting in China, where all these big businessmen are just coming out and just pouring millions and millions. I mean, fair play to them, but yeah, for me, it was a no-no.
It's certainly distorting players' wages, transfer fees, and, you know, the kind of quality of player that the money's being paid for. It's crazy.
Yeah, mad, crazy. I mean, when you're seeing players earning freaking 100,000 net, US net a week over there, even, and like I say, some even more, it's just ridiculous, beyond a joke.
As a former professional, when you see a player go over to China and just playing for the money, obviously, you know, it's a ridiculous amount of money. But if you go over to China to play football, you're not thinking, well, this is a good career move. Financially, it's a good career move, but there's no aspiration to be a better player. There's no aspiration to win something important. You're just kind of going over there for the money, aren't you? Do you find that disappointing?
Yeah, you do in a way. But to be fair, but then on the flip side, the Chinese Super League is improved so much, and because these better players are going, so the actual overall competition has improved. But for me, it's all about a lifestyle opportunity and choice. Mm. And no disrespect to being in China, it's not the kind of place where I would have a lifestyle, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, we're coming to the end of the podcast. Lloyd, awesome for you to join us and talk about your career and playing for Brighton.
Thank you.
Really, really appreciate it. Are we going to see you at next year or this year's Renf game, if you're not injured?
Yeah, if I'm not injured, obviously I need to get back into some fitness. So, I mean, last year, because I'm still recovering from my torn hip flexor that I did back last year, and even now it's still not 100%. But, yeah, hopefully this year I should be fit by come October time then.
Awesome. And, Steve, before we go, I have to get your prediction for the weekend. I always like to finish on some predictions. So, Steve...
Can I just say...
Yes, you can.
I'm never fit when I cross that white line at the Renf game. So you haven't got much to live up to, Lloydie.
Quality.
There's being fit, but there's being fit, or I should say, there's being unfit eating too many pies, and there's being unfit sort of having an injury.
Yeah.
I don't eat pies, mate.
I always thought the pies in Australia were really nice.
Predictions, is that what you're going to ask?
Yes, sorry, predictions, yes. And don't say it.
No, 3-1.
Yes, that's it, Steve. That's what we want. Positive. Lloyd, what do you reckon the score at the weekend will be?
3-1. But I'll take a scrappy 1-0.
Do you think the Albion can beat Huddersfield? I think we only need one more win. I know they're saying, in fact, Chris Hughton said, it'll probably take more than that. But let's be honest, we all think it's going to be one more. One more win will do it. Just because of the teams below us, who they've got to play. And if we beat Huddersfield, we'll put 6 points distance between them and us.
And a lot of those teams have still got hard run-ins us. But you know, if we get the job done after the Burnley game, those hard games are going to be a lot easier.
Yeah, exactly. I reckon if we can, also if we can go to Crystal Palace and try and get a draw out of that, that will put the sealers on it, I reckon.
Let's just say we get a point Saturday and a point the following Saturday. You know, that's still, that's two games gone. That's two less games for them to catch us.
Mm.
And the distance is still the same.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the one thing you can take about the Leicester game is no damage was really done. Yes, we could have gone 9 points clear of relegation, but at the end of the day, we're still six. And, we move on to this weekend. Okay, let's wrap that up. Okay, Lloyd, once again, thanks very much for joining us. It's been awesome to talk to you. And, let's hope we can see you at the Renfrew game later in the year. Steve, thanks for joining me once. No worries. Thanks for joining me once again. And tune in for the next podcast, which we hope will be dropping in a week. All right, cheers for now. Bye.
See you guys. Bye-bye.